Good day, Crime Talk aficionados. This is Scott Reich of Crime Talk, and thank you for tuning in. First on the docket, Lori Vallow. More bad luck for her. Second, progress on an old cold case. Third, domestic violence cases. Are they up or are they down during the Corona 19 situation? And a middle school teacher goes to prison for inappropriate conduct with a minor. And finally, our dumb criminal contestant of the day. Let's talk about it. Good day, Crime Talk aficionados. Thank you for tuning into Crime Talk. My name is Scott Reich. If you have not already done so, please hit that subscribe button, hit that little bell so that you receive notifications of when we put up new content. And as always, leave us a comment below as to what you think about the cases we've discussed today. First on the docket, more bad news for Lori Vallow. That's right. She was actually set for a bond reduction hearing. That's right. Another bond reduction hearing in her case. That bond reduction hearing was supposed to take place on Friday, April 24th. Well, the court has ordered that that date should be vacated, and now her new bond reduction hearing date is scheduled for May 1st at 2 p.m. Yes, you can blame the coronavirus. Bad luck. Or just maybe a little bit of karma for sure. Now, we talked about it last week regarding the subpoenas and the discovery requests made by the counsel for Ms. Vallow in this particular case. We thought that they were burdensome, more than likely going to be objected to or denied. And guess what? The prosecutors have filed their responses and basically said, we're going to give you everything that we're obligated to do, but we're not going to go around conducting your investigation. Quickly, for those of you who do not know or are new to the channel, Lori Vallow is charged with two counts of desertion of her children. Specifically, J.J. Vallow and Ty Lee Ryan have been missing since September. Her previous husband, Charles Vallow, was shot and killed by her brother, Alex Cox, in Chandler, Arizona, in July of 2019. Cox claimed self-defense. Lori then moved to Rexburg, Idaho, shortly after Charles' death. She then married Chad DeBell, an author of doomsday-type books. And then in November, 2 weeks after his wife Tammy died in her sleep, they were married. Autopsy results for her death have not yet been released, but authorities actually exhumed her body. And the attorney general is assisting the district attorney in the basically homicide potential investigation as it relates to Tammy. The police in Arizona are also investigating the death of her ex-husband, Charles. So just a tangled web that Lori Vallow has weaved for sure. So when a criminal case begins, it's automatic in some jurisdictions. Sometimes you have to put in a perfunctory request, requesting everything that you're entitled to do just to make sure you get it. The attorney for Lori Vallow, we've stated, according to his website, he does not do primarily criminal defense work, but he does some mediation, family law, and divorce, and a smattering of personal injury matters. But criminal defense does not seem to be something of his forte, at least to the point where he wants to advertise for it. We talked about all the subpoenas that were issued. A lot of them were to law enforcement agencies in Idaho as well as Arizona. It's going to be very unlikely that any of those items are in fact produced, but we'll wait and see. The requests that were made to the district attorneys to produce documents in the course of their investigation, they stated that they'll turn over what they're entitled to, but they're not going to go on this collection of evidence for the defendant. Now, that's fair. If it's in the care, custody, and control of the district attorney or agencies that report directly to the district attorney, they could be required to go get that information. Otherwise, you have to go subpoena that information. But just because you subpoena the information doesn't necessarily mean that you're going to get it. It has to be relevant. It can't be overly burdensome. And you can't just be there looking what they refer to as a fishing expedition, saying you're not sure what you're going to find, but you'll know it when you see it. It doesn't work that way. You have to be very specific and very deliberate in those subpoena requests. Otherwise, a motion to quash will be filed. Lori Vallow's attorney filed another subpoena, and that was to the Madison County Sheriff's Department. And they want basically the full name, employee badge number of basically everyone who works in the sheriff's department. They want all email records, memorandums, statements, voicemails, texts, guidelines, directives associated with the department's COVID-19 pandemic situation, recording of phone calls, things of that nature. Now, unless Lori Vallow told her attorney, and it was recorded mistakenly. As we understand, a call was recorded and it was destroyed between Ms. Vallow and her attorney. Obviously, the prosecution doesn't get that call, and my understanding is the sheriff has already destroyed it. So unless she said, this is where the children are, and then the police go get it, there would be no basis to suppress any evidence based upon that. And it appears as though nothing of substance was necessarily said and or listened to by the sheriff, let alone the district attorney. Seems like they don't have much to work with, so they're going to try and ride that particular horse for a while to see if they can make some hay out of their call being listened to. Now, I would be the first one to tell you that any call between an attorney and his client should not be recorded in any way, but let's face it, it happens. A lot of facilities do not have a specific phone line to contact your attorney, and it'll actually say on the other end, this is a recorded call. And you learn and you know that you can talk about generally, this is a case procedure and posture, but you're not going to talk about the facts of the case over that phone. You go down to the jail, no matter how inconvenient it is to go and do it, to have that face-to-face contact. Now, one of the things that the prosecution has to do is to disclose all of the witnesses that they have interviewed. And you will notice in the list of potential witnesses or people with identifying information, there obviously includes people from Yellowstone. Teachers and principals from the school are included on that list, along with FBI agents. That's standard. Everybody on the defense gets to know whom the district attorney has interviewed. It's not a big surprise because you usually get the statements that were prepared either by the person or the results of interview or a summary of the FBI 302 if the FBI was involved. But it's just a formal disclosure, and it lets you see that the people that they're interviewing are what we know from what we've learned as a result of the investigation so far, that these children were pulled from school. No one has heard from them since, and it's going to be statements that were made either by Lori Vallow or Chad Daybell shortly after these children were reported missing. I think Lori Vallow's luck is going to get worse and worse as this case progresses, and I don't think, other than creating more paperwork for the sheriff's department, that he's going to get anything out of what he is looking for by subpoenaing everybody's name, rank, and serial number at the sheriff's department. Seems like a wild goose chase. I would anticipate a motion to quash, and at a minimum, the defense attorney is going to have to articulate to the judge why he believes it is relevant. Okay, and remember, we've talked about this. Something is relevant at trial if it goes to prove or disprove a material element of the offense. You don't get to retry everybody's life history, their sad story. It's relevant if it goes to prove or disprove that it was the defendant on this particular day, allegedly did this without legal justification. That's what it comes down to. All this stuff about police and police procedures at the jail has to do with nothing related to the crime itself. Maybe it's an attempt to use it for the bond reduction that he won't be able to visit with his client. Don't see her getting out unless she produces collateral for that bond. And I think full Chad Daybell was going to do it. He would have done it by now. Don't think he has it. Probably saving his last few bucks for his own criminal defense attorney. Next on the docket, an update on an old cold case out of California. That's the Kristen Smart case. And a search warrant has again been served at a Los Angeles County home of a former classmate of Kristen Smart, who went missing nearly 24 years ago when she was a 19-year-old student. The individual's house that was served is Paul Flores, who continues to be a person of interest in the disappearance of Kristen Smart back in 1996. Now, we understand everyone is presumed to be innocent, and they are given that presumption. However, after 24 years, the police must have some new information to obtain a search warrant that would not necessarily be stale. And there has to be something of relevance at that house that the police reasonably believe is in the residence. It'll be curious to see if perhaps there's some new DNA evidence and they were actually able to get some DNA evidence from the house. These types of old cases, yes, they linger. However, people need to remember there in most jurisdictions, if there is not a dedicated detective, sometimes more than one, that do nothing but go back and investigate cold cases. I can personally tell you, I did a case about 5 years ago. It was a 23-year-old cold case. And they put one of the best detectives on that case that I've ever seen do police work. And he solved it, resulted in three people being charged, everyone being convicted, going to prison without the possibility of parole. So it's heartening to know that justice will be done and that these people are not forgotten. These victims are not forgotten. Next on the docket, the question that has maybe come up a couple of times if you've been at home spending a lot more time with your spouse or partner, the question is, are domestic violence cases up or down during the COVID-19 pandemic? Well, crime in general has been going down. According to an analysis done by the Marshall Project, where they examined three American cities, and they were able to drill down into some data and give us a little better picture. They specifically looked at Chicago, Austin, and Chandler, Arizona, where domestic violence appears to be dropping, as have reports of all crime. But domestic violence numbers are falling less than crime overall, and in some cases, the kinds of abuse reported is more violent. And the conclusion that they come up with is that that may be because it's harder for victims to get help during the pandemic. Through this analysis, they were able to come to the conclusion that although people were concerned that domestic violence would increase, their analysis found that domestic violence reports have declined in three cities when compared to the same week in previous year, though not as dramatically as crime overall. They also conclude that domestic violence is notoriously difficult to track using police data. Even during normal times, only about half of the victims of violent domestic crimes call the police when they are assaulted by a family member. There was concern that stay-at-home orders, historic unemployment, and other social factors related to the pandemic can make victims even less likely to call, which means public statistics may not represent what is accurately happening at homes across the country. They also conclude that sometimes tolerating abuse is safer when the alternative is moving into a shelter where victims and their children may be exposed to the coronavirus as well as basically being homeless. We bring this to you because obviously there's a concern with domestic violence. It's obviously a little easier to get away from domestic violence if one can go to work, if you know the abuser is going to be going to work. And it's obviously much more difficult in these types of situations. We want to remind everybody that if you are a victim of domestic abuse, that you can, in fact, seek help. You can text, email, call 911 if you need to. Nobody of either sex needs to be abused by another individual. It's a simple rule. You keep your hands to yourself, and it's never, ever, ever, ever okay to hit a woman. And vice versa, but I'm a guy. I'm old school. I taught that to my kids. You never, ever, ever touch a girl. You never touch a woman. And I told my son, you don't even hit your sister. And he says, well, but she started it. I'm like, I don't care. You don't do it. If you know somebody that needs assistance, you know somebody needs help, go talk to them, go check on them, see if they're okay. I personally believe just because of the number of domestic calls that we have received since this COVID-19, which have gone up dramatically, that there are more cases out there where people need help. So if you think somebody's in danger, go check in on them, make sure they're okay. Or if you know if somebody's been involved in a situation in the past, go check on them, make sure they're okay. Next on the docket, a middle school teacher is going to prison for 5 years because of some inappropriate conduct. And wait till you hear about her story. Yes, we all know what happens. You hear about cases, but let's face it. Normally, it is the male engaging in this conduct with a female student. But this teacher, a 23-year-old English teacher in Durand, Arkansas Middle School in rural Wisconsin, is going to prison for 5 years and then will have supervision for another 10 years. What, pray tell, did she do? Well, she set up a fake Instagram account to send nude photos to a 14-year-old student of hers. Completely wrong. You just don't do this, all right? We have had this, the Reich Law Firm rules of dating. Yes, always advise somebody, make sure you see a birth certificate to make sure that they are 18 or older. But as a general rule, if somebody is in middle school, they're probably not 18 yet. Run, go away. This young teacher, Miss Sarah Heskin, obviously must have found her love of her life, or who knows what the hell she was thinking, but wouldn't want her teaching my children if that's the kind of good judgment and decision-making process that she thinks is appropriate. Fortunately, the school believes that there was only one victim in this particular case. One is too many, but they don't believe that she was out there preying on the other young boys that go to the school. Next on the docket, our dumb criminal contestant of the day. And yes, this can be summarized into one sentence. That wasn't a sexual assault. That was my way of saying hi. That's right. Juan Antonio Velez, when confronted by police as to why he would walk up to women in a Walmart and grab their buttocks, it wasn't because he was attempting to sexually assault them. It was because that's the way he communicates with women. Juan Antonio Velez, who is obviously given the presumption of innocence as he still remains in custody, stated that he was not doing anything inappropriate, but that's the way that he communicates with women. Well, Mr. Juan Antonio Velez, somehow I think that's not the best pickup thing you could do. You could perhaps asking, may I help you with your groceries? Is there any chance that we could have a drink? But by grabbing one's butt, you are actually committing a sexual assault. Whether you disagree with it or not, that's the law in most jurisdictions. If you grabbed someone's buttocks with the intent for abuse or sexual gratification, that is a sexual offense. Now, had a case once where a client was charged with doing some very bad things. One of the allegations was that he put a loaded gun in the victim's mouth. It was a domestic case, kind of things gone bad, so to speak. And let's just say the potential defense of it was foreplay wasn't going to go very well. But that's what the client believed. Apparently, that's what Mr. Juan Antonio Velez believes. But bad advice. So therefore, Mr. Juan Antonio Velez, you are our dumb criminal contestant of the day. Thank you for watching. We appreciate you doing so. We know that there are lots of options these days on the internet to watch. We appreciate the fact that you've taken the time to watch our little channel. We appreciate it. We would ask that you share it. We ask that you watch it. Go back and watch those old videos as well. We would appreciate that as well, and I think it'll give you some context as to who we are here at Crime Talk, what we do, and why we do it. Have a great day. Thanks for watching.